You know, for someone who's been an activist within the African American community here in the Twin Ports, what is it like for you to see what happened in Baton Rouge and in Falcon Heights and now Dallas?
I was horrified, especially coming through this weekend, this holiday weekend. It was had already started in the Bronx when Delron Smalls was shot in front of his wife and children by an off-duty police officer during a car accident that occurred between the two of them. That was the first incident. So we had been on watch and aware that there was the possibility that things would happen, but we were not prepared at all for the escalation of the violence so quickly with first Alton Sterling and then Philandro Castile and now the possible lynching incident in Atlanta and the retaliation by a lone gunman against the Dallas police officers during the peaceful march that had been coordinated with the police department and the Black Lives Matter movement and organizers in Dallas. This has been a horrendous week for us. I've dealt with many calls from constituents in both Superior and Duluth, both Black and white, asking what to do, how should we react, dealing with many calls from the Black community. People are fearful, feeling traumatized. I know my own family is experiencing these feelings right now. And it's just been horrendous. You know, I just spoke with Mayor Emily Larson this morning. She called to check in to see how I was doing. And we talked a little bit regarding, you know, we asked her to speak out and regarding asking every elected official to take a stand against the racism, take a stand against the police killings, and definitely take a stand against any retaliatory killings. We don't want violence. We want a peaceful resolution to all of this. Violence is not the answer. So, yes, it's been a very traumatic and turmoil-filled week for us all.
Well, and, you know, with Dallas just now, you know, in the last day, I mean, do you feel like the incidents of this past week have caused people to reach a boiling point where they're frustrated, where they see these things in the news all the time and feel like nothing is being done about it?
I don't think there's nothing being done about it. I think the fact of this system is so broken and has been ingrained since the foundation of the United States as we know it, that it's not a question of not being able to do anything about it. It's a question of how do you break down this broken system? How do you reestablish one that is equitable for everyone and do it in a timely manner without totally destroying the fabric of American society and the infrastructure? And at this point, I think a lot of people are so hurt and scared and frustrated that that's what they think is going to be the only way that this can happen. But history teaches us that every destructive revolution and every revolution that does tear down these type of structures within itself sows its own seeds of destruction and sows its own seeds for the same type of bureaucracy and single-mindedness and racism that preceded it. People need to understand that we have to look at historical events and these historical revolutions and take them with a grain of salt towards the future. We have to change the precedent. We have to change the way we think, and we have to change the way we want these things to get done. It is not just a question of voting for the lesser of two evils. We already know our political system needs to be drastically changed. How do we do that? Do we institute a third and a fourth party, or do we recognize that the changes need to come from within both parties as they now stand, which both parties are right now politically divided? They're polarized around issues of Black Lives Matter, around issues of right versus left, around issues of conservatism, around issues of Islamophobia, hate, and racism. There are deep seated issues going on within those parties right now. They are streaming out into the public. That's what's going on. We have a concerted group of people, individuals who are fearful of difference, who are fearful of change, and are being spoon-fed hateful rhetoric by their leaders. And they're afraid. They have every right to be afraid. And we understand their fear that they don't understand Black people. They don't understand the differences. They think that everything is being taken away from them. They are afraid to lose their privilege. And on the other hand, you have a group of people of color who are being judged by their religion, being judged by their color, being profiled, being denied basic human rights and human decency. And they are feeling afraid, and the exact same fears that are being felt by white supremacists and by low-income white people.
And so, Kim, do you feel like these
polarize that?
So, do you feel like these incidents, all of these shootings of the past week, do you feel like they're directly tied to the political rhetoric that we're seeing during the presidential campaign?
I believe they are directly tied to the political rhetoric, to the foundations upon which police trainings have always been formulated, that police are taught to fear the public, in a sense that the public will lie to them and that the public is a danger to them. And that isn't the way it should be. Yes, there are certain members of the public who are a danger to not just police officers, but to everybody. And how do we control them without the violence? How do we control that without making everybody a suspect or treating the public like they are enemies? That happens, and then you compound that with the fact that policing is based in plantation policing, which was based in controlling and apprehending and oppressing slaves who wanted to run away and keeping slaves on the plantation. That same mindset has gone through all of the systems that we have in place today. How do we change that? How do we change police mindsets? And it's not just white police, it's Black police, it's Asian police, it's all policemen. It's a mindset that is taught to them during their training. That needs to change. There's a mindset in the public that, you know, that police are our enemy, and they are not our enemy. They are supposed to be our protectors. They are supposed to be community guardians of the peace. But what ends up happening is they are guardians of executive power. They are guardians of corporate property. And we are, in a sense, seen as that property. People of the United States are seen as that property. So much more so, people of color. And the fact, compound with the fact that we are seen as a commodity for the prison, for-profit prison system. More people in this country, not just Black people, but more people in this country are being charged exorbitant fines, being fined for being homeless, being fined for being poor, being debtors' prisons are coming back alive. More people are being put in the prison for victimless crimes, for nonviolent crimes, and for very minor offenses, serving long-term sentences, paying exorbitant fines. These are all systematic issues that are related and are compounding towards these incidents of violence, which are prolific within the people of color communities.
Well, Kim, I wanted to ask you about what you were saying before about police are not the enemy. And so I'm thinking about that video of the woman who was live Facebook streaming the fatal shooting in Falcon Heights. Mm-hmm. And the voice of the officer pointing the gun, to me, it sounded like fear. And if at this point in time when we have, I think it's 12 officers injured now and five dead in Dallas, how do you move on from here when people are afraid of one another? The law enforcement are afraid of interacting with people of color because they're afraid that they're going to be blamed, whether fairly or justly. And then you have people of color who are afraid that they're going to be killed or shot because of their skin.
At this point, I honestly and truly have to say I do not know. At this moment, I'm one of those fearful people. I'm afraid to walk out my door. You know, my daughter, I just got off the phone with her. She said, I'm sitting on the floor. She just had a baby by C-section. I said, what are you sitting on the floor for? She said, because I am afraid that because people know we're Black and we live in this house, somebody might shoot through our windows. She was sitting on the floor with her baby. I'm like, that is ridiculous. You need to get up, but I understand the fear. I understand the trepidation. I understand the fear that these police officers have. They fear for them their lives every day. But they, you know, this has gotten to the point. It is out of hand, and there are people out here who are going to try to push this into a race war, and we cannot allow that to happen. We have to come together. We have to find a way to move forward. We have to find a way to stop the police killings, to stop the brutality, to stop any retribution, any retaliations towards these police officers. And then we need to get everybody in this country to realize and recognize the humanity of each other. I can say honestly, at the very heart and base of all of this is the dehumanization of several groups of people by one group of people. And that needs to change. We are all human beings. We all have a right to live on this planet. We all have a right to be treated with respect and dignity, whether you wear a uniform or not. And that is the main point of the rally that we're coming up, that we've got coming up next week, is we are standing against the police killings. We're standing against the police brutality. And we're demanding that our elected officials make a stand against this hate, make a stand against racism. At this point, we, the people of color, are saying to our white allies, it's no longer a question of you being allies. We need you to be accomplices in changing the face of hatred and racism in this, in our country. We need you to stand up with us. Use your privilege that you have and say enough. We have to stop this.
And is that enough to just, you know, attend a vigil and to say, we're not going to take this? What, you know, how do communities of color and privileged people or just white people, you know, stand together against this? You know, I mean, I think every time this happens, you have an event, people react, and then it fades back into the background.
And the one thing we're letting people know, this is not that same type of event anymore. It can no longer be. Someone dies, they become a hashtag, you march, you pray, you have a vigil, you forgive, and you move on. We have to now bump up the conversations. We have to now bump up the action. It's no longer a question of standing on the sidelines and watching as black people take the forefront. It's getting in the trenches with us. It's saying no more. It's taking these actions to your city councilor. It's making that phone call to your state and your congressional representative. It's standing up yourself and saying, I will not be a part of this racism. I will not allow it to happen on the street, in my home, in my business, wherever I am. I have to take that stand. Whether you are black, whether you are white, it doesn't matter. We as a people need to unify to stop this. Mm-hmm. It's no longer a question of another rally. It's no longer a question of a continuing conversation. It is time to take that stand.